Welcome to the Buddha Sasana Podcast. This talk was given by Bhikkhu Chintita in Austin, Texas.
In our exploration of dependent co-arising so far, we've looked at the links of this massive suffering, birth, becoming, and appropriation. We've learned that appropriation gives rise to becoming by defining a personal identity. Becoming gives rise to birth by projecting that identity into the cycle of birth and death called samsara. And birth gives rise to the massive suffering accrued life after life. We now turn to craving, the origin of appropriation. Because of feeling, craving, because of craving, appropriation. Craving is at the center of the human condition in several ways. It is the origin of suffering. It's the root of greed, aversion, and delusion, and thereby of unwholesome kamma. It is the moisture that nourishes growth in becoming and twists it to personal advantage. Craving is also one of the weakest links in dependent co-arising, and therefore among the most responsive to Buddhist practice. Craving also gives rise to seeking behavior, to evaluation and planning. The Pali word for craving is tanha, from a root that originally meant thirst or drought, and is sometimes translated more accurately, but also more awkwardly, as dissatisfaction. Its scope includes craving to have what we don't have, craving to keep what we have, craving to get rid of what we have, and craving to avoid what we don't have. It's defined as follows in the context of the Four Noble Truths. Now this, bhikkhus, is the noble truth of the origin of suffering. It is this craving which leads to renewed existence accompanied by delight and lust, seeking delight here and there, that is, craving for sensual pleasures, craving for becoming, and craving for unbecoming. So we see that craving is of three kinds: craving sensuality, craving becoming, and craving unbecoming. We've already encountered appropriation of sensuality in the last talks. Now we see that we can crave sensuality as well. Craving serves a purpose in human affairs. It gives rise either to seeking or to guarding. To seeking how we want things to be, and to guarding how things are but might change. Seeking or guarding calls on perception and intention in order to assess the situation related to what is craved and to plan actions that satisfy that craving. In these ways, craving encourages growth of cognizance as well as unwholesome kamma, intentional, bodily, verbal, and mental action played out on the basis of the greed, aversion, and delusion associated with craving. Craving for becoming and for unbecoming is the ongoing drive behind the downstream links of appropriation and becoming. In brief, alongside sensuality, we crave ourselves, that is, our personalities. And this drives appropriation and becoming who we think we are, always dissatisfied. This process entails constantly shoring up and sometimes ejecting what is me and mine. Craving is the origin of appropriation. One might at first sight Imagine that appropriation is simply an escalation of craving. Something appeals to me, so I appropriate it as mine. However, only sensuality among the objects of craving, which again are sensuality, becoming, and unbecoming, corresponds to one of the four objects of appropriation, which again are sensuality, views, conduct and observances, and doctrine of self. Nonetheless, craving for sensuality does indeed give rise to appropriation of sensuality, as the Buddha expresses in a pun. One is stuck, Radha, tightly stuck in desire, lust, delight, and craving for appearance. Therefore, one is called a being. This passage is repeated as for appearance, so for feeling, perception, formations, and cognizance. This passage is a play on words in which stuck is satta, the past participle of the verb sujjati, and tightly stuck is wisatta. And a being, that is, what we become, is also satta. One is stuck, Radha, rightly stuck in desire, lust, delight, and craving for appearance. Therefore, one is called a being. Because we get stuck in craving, we become a being. What is craved is appropriated into our personality. Notice the reference to the aggregates in this passage, which range over the objects of craving. Some of those things we appropriate will be the things we already enjoy: car, dog, family, bank account, fame, power, social network, reputation. Others may overshoot our actually lived sensual experience, such as that Ferrari that we test drove but cannot possibly afford, and that accords so well with the real me we want to become. Recall from the last chapter that we can appropriate the identity of a tycoon or celebrity even with no prospect of actually becoming one objectively, and we will suffer for it. Craving for becoming is the main driver of appropriation, wanting to become someone, to appropriate the parts of a coherent personality, to acquire a personal footprint. We see this kind of craving constantly at work in our lives. Since the object of this craving is our personal footprint, this has the hugely unfortunate consequence of flooding our footprint with suffering. We have a personal stake in attaining or preserving what is me and mine. Just as craving sensual pleasure is painful or suffering, as long as we long for what we don't have, grieve for what we've lost, and get anxious for what we know we will lose, so also is craving for our personal footprint. However, our personal footprint is bigger, more pervasive, and even more important to us than sensual pleasure. If there is a threat of losing some part of it through accident, repossession, wear, tear, and rust, we suffer, or if we have not gained it, we still suffer. In either case, not only is the immediate comfort and power of our BMW at stake, if we have let it define us, who we are is at stake. The greater the personal footprint, the greater the craving, and the greater the suffering. If we have also appropriated a second car, a vacation home, a yacht, a Rolex watch, or Tostoni shoes as me or mine, we suffer all the more. Of course, we nervously watch the stock market throughout the day, and with craving, cognizance will be encouraged to grow, increase, and flourish, giving us still more to appropriate. So we know that craving is the origin of suffering. Craving has both conceptual and emotive aspects. We can think of craving conceptually as a perceived gap between two presumptions: the world is such and such, and if only it were this and that. Whereas Jnanananda has it, a gap between object and subject. ever seeking opportunities for personal advantage, we discover a lot of these gaps, each of which presents us with a problem, the problem of closing the gap. We'll see in future talks how the whole problem actually results from conceptual mistakes arising in upstream links. But in the meantime, the gap is experienced as suffering at some level or another, as stress, as anxiety, as restlessness, as grief, or even as excruciating pain. Dissatisfaction, as a translation of dukkha, seems to cover both the conceptual and emotional aspects of craving, but fails to cover the full emotional range of dukkha. We crave certain things, but cannot attain them. Or if we do attain them, we fear losing them. We crave to continue our existence, but must someday die. We crave to rid ourselves of that which irks us. We crave to become pain-free, but experience pain. We crave to retain every aspect of what we own, but see it all slipping through our fingers like sand. In spite of life's many broken promises, we generally do not have the wherewithal to still our craving, even as our car becomes dented, worn out, and rusted, as our spouse gets old, bent, and wrinkled, as our own health deteriorates, and as one by one we lose our family members. From a dear one comes sorrow, lamentation, pain, distress, and despair. Given enough time, we lose everything that we count as me and mine, our youth, beauty, and health, our family and friends, our possessions. If these challenges come suddenly without hope of recovering or attaining who we think we have become, we go into great despair or become even suicidal. To the extent we appropriate personal reputation, we defend ourselves against verbal attack or rumor in a barrage of angry tweets. We suffer when the views we espouse are threatened. We suffer when we are unable to maintain our accustomed behaviors and circumstances. We even suffer when we have personal doubts about who or what we think we are. We're forever compelled to shore up and repair our personal footprint. It's painful to be someone. The cost of maintenance is enormous. A lot of drama happens around craving. Craving floods the downstream links with suffering. What we appropriate, we crave, for we crave becoming and are intent on extending and defending our personal footprint as me and mine. In the case of sensuality, if we pile craving for becoming on top of craving for sensuality, we're just doubling down on the suffering. Becoming someone is fraught with suffering, which is why it is compared to a fire, with appropriation providing the five heaps of fuel. All the while, we are ever hungry for more experience and for the production of more things that we can appropriate and throw on the fire. Having become someone in this life, birth ensures we will carry the flames of craving into samsara, in which we've been amassing suffering over beginningless time. So let's talk about craving sensuality. And next week we'll talk about craving becoming and unbecoming. Sensuality begins with physical sensations that we enjoy. Laying in the warm sun with eyes closed, listening to the rustling of leaves, the taste of vanilla ice cream on the tongue, a rhythmic melody on the radio, the sight of an attractive person of the preferred gender. Sensuality broadly can include land, goods, gold, cattle, horses, serving men, women, and kinfolk, which are experienced more abstractly than the initial examples, as things we might take pleasure in possessing, or which provide a kind of footing in the physical world that may provide conditions for comfort and security. Wealth, for instance, is not something we can eat, drink, or swim in, but it is an instrument for acquiring something we can eat, drink, or swim in. Modern people's lists of comforts and pleasures might similarly include football games, financial success, designer clothing, great hair, wild parties, fast women and fast cars, and abundant thumbs up for our social media posts. The Pali for sensuality is kamma, which can mean desire or pleasure, but its use tends to center around sexual pleasure or passion. It's helpful to distinguish sensual pleasure itself from craving for sensual pleasure, even though the Pali word kamma is somewhat ambiguous between the two. Actually, most of us have trouble distinguishing the two, for sensuality per se tends to give immediate rise to craving ipso facto. Although a pleasurable sensual feeling is pleasurable, the craving itself is painful. However, one can, in fact, experience sensual pleasures without craving. Some nights ago, after a beautiful sunset, I looked up and saw Jupiter and a dimmer Saturn just slightly to the east. How cool is that? Sensual pleasure without drama. Strangely, what we appropriate is often not what we crave, but rather the craving itself, or rather the seeking behavior that craving typically gives rise to. This may be the case in addiction or in other compulsive behaviors. We become not an enjoyer of drugs or an enjoyer of TV entertainment, but we become a seeker of a fix, that is, an addict, or a seeker of TV entertainment, that is, a channel surfer. We become not a possessor of great wealth, but an entrepreneur intent on greater wealth. In other words, we appropriate the quest rather than the rewards of the quest, sometimes to the extent of losing interest in the actual object of that quest. Much of the sensuality we crave might also be appropriated as me or mine, but we should be aware, for that is not a strong fetter, the wise say, which is made of iron, wood, or hemp, but the infatuation and longing for jewels and ornaments, children and wives, that, they say, is a far stronger fetter, which pulls one downward, and though seemingly loose, is hard to remove. This, too, the wise cut off. Giving up sensual pleasure, and without any longing, they renounce the world. This might be the case with our own bodies, our natural good looks, our sparkling personality, our new sneakers, our spouse, our Oscar, and with more abstract things like money, fame, and power. Craving is the origin of seeking. We saw on the talks on becoming that craving plays a role in the process of growth of our phenomenal world. This process proceeds as follows. One, craving has arisen or pooled somewhere. Two, cognizance descends upon that site. And three, cognizance grows, increases, and flourishes. Recall the simile in which craving is the moisture and cognizance a seed that grows in the presence of moisture. This is a cognitive process that cross-entangles both coming and craving, in which craving provides an enabling condition, an encouragement, such that overall, where there is craving is where the world tends to grow. From the perspective of craving, we see that this cognitive process makes complete functional sense, since craving represents the most immediate needs of the self, where a gap needs to be filled, and cognizance can potentially serve to fill that gap. The growth of cognizance seeks a way to fill the gap through assessing the situation, that is perception, and planning a resolution, that is intention. What we seek is presumed to provide some personal advantage. As perception and intention grow with cognizance, the moisture of craving will naturally extend to objects that are newly revealed to be conditioning factors for intended actions. For instance, suppose I crave the prospect of the close of a particular business deal. This triggers seeking behavior. As cognizance descends, grows an assessment of the relevant conditions, and reveals that my sloppy physical appearance may be an impediment to closing the deal. Cognizance then also grows a plan for improving my physical appearance. With some deliberation, I end up craving a suit and a tie. A plan cognized and enacted results in gaining said suit and tie. Later, looking quite dapper, I go proudly into a coffee shop before my meeting and perceive through a series of craving gives rise to cognizance gives rise to growth steps, a looming danger to my new attire in the form of a clumsy gentleman with topped-off cappuccino bumping into people in chairs and heading in my general direction. Craving to preserve the integrity of my clothing, additional assessment and planning ensues as a consequence of cognizance. Much of our life goes on like this. The moisture of craving spreads along chains of conditionality involved in achieving or maintaining what benefits our goals, nurturing cognizance-driven growth, and further extending such chains into more refined seeking. Let me stop here for now. Next week, I'll finish talking about this kind of dynamic of craving as it gives rise to seeking behavior, working together with cognizance. Then I will talk about the practice that limits craving.